evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Hi. Happy Monday. How was your weekend? Did you have a good time? Here in Atlanta, we went to a bunch of neighborhood festivals. I love neighborhood festivals. In Chicago, they pack them all into the month of August because there's only two seasons in Chicago, August and winter. But here in the buckle of the Bible Belt, we actually have four seasons down here, very mild winters, and the other three are just pretty amazing. So that's what we did today, or yesterday, and Saturday, all weekend. We went to, I think, three or four different neighborhood festivals. I love neighborhood festivals. It's a good place to do your Christmas shopping, too, you know, from the local artists. Had an interesting thing happen this morning. I got to tell you about this. For those of you who are regular listeners, you've probably heard Kathy or I, probably me, talk about the preschool that Molly goes to. This is her second year there. And we like it so much, she's probably going to go there for kindergarten. But it's run by a mainstream Christian denomination church, which I just don't feel comfortable mentioning. But it's not Southern Baptist. And it's in a nearby town, near to where we live, 15-minute drive. And we love it there. It's a great, great curriculum. The teachers are wonderful. These are 3- and 4-year-olds. Molly went during when she was 3, and now she's 4. And next year when she's 5, we will probably send her there for kindergarten. So we were kind of surprised. You all know that we're atheists. We are non-believers in religious dogma. I think both Kathy and I would classify or qualify ourselves as spiritual, but not in a religious or theological sense by any means. As a matter of fact, if you're a regular listener to this program, you know I attack the hypocrisy of just about every religion, and I think they're all nonsense. But this particular church-based school, it's not really a church-based school. It's a school in a church is what it amounts to. And they offer the little kids some Christian stuff along with, like, they say a little prayer before they have their snack, their mid-morning snack. And Christmas is definitely a religious celebration, the birth of Jesus. And Halloween is celebrated with all the fun and vigor of any public school, which a lot of, Christian fundamentalists might find that a little bit unusual. But this school, you know, it's just Thanksgiving, Christmas. This is the holiday season. We're entering into it. And all the kids get very excited, and they make pumpkins. And Molly came home the other day with a little song about five little pumpkins. And one of the lines in the song is, witches in the air, and so on and so forth. The few times that Molly's come home with a little bit of a Christian thing happening, we just, it was fine. You know, she bowed her head one time at dinner, before we had dinner, to thank the Lord for the meal. And, you know, we just let her do it. It's fine. She said something to me tonight when I was reading her story. She sang a little song to me about the Lord is good. And when she finished, I was laying there in bed with her. I said, honey, what's the Lord? And she said, oh, that's the love in your heart. Did you hear that on the monitor? Yeah, that's the love in your heart. And I just thought, well, this is great. You know, the real fundamentals of the Christian faith, I have no problem with at all. As a matter of fact, I deeply appreciate. I kind of follow the Gandhi statement. I love your Christ. A little bit doubtful about your Christians, though. You know, well, in spades here in the South. Trust me. All right. There's the setup. So this morning was a coffee for the parents of our kids, a 4-year-old preschool class. And there are not that many kids there. I think there's, 10, Kathy? Maybe 10. And about 6 parents showed up, which is pretty standard. And it's about an hour and a half a meeting with the headmistress or the principal, whatever you want to call her, the woman who runs the school, and one of the two teachers. They have a teacher in each class and a teaching assistant. So we're sitting around talking about all the things that 4-year-olds go through, and this instructor, or the head of the school, is very, very well-educated and well-versed in child psychology and child developmental stuff, and she's just excellent. We love her. That's the reason we send our kid there, and we love the teachers there. So we're halfway into this, now about two-thirds of the way into this, And all of a sudden, the story, one of the parents, it was a very informal setting. We're sitting in the principal's office, a couple of us on chairs, a couple sitting on the floor. And one of the parents said, well, if I can just mention this without, you know, without a big debate or anything, but she said, I'm having a problem with the school celebration of Halloween. Right away, because we were just talking about the Halloween party coming up and how the kids all come to class in their costumes. They have a little parade around the school grounds, yada, 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 through the principal's office, which happens to be right next to the sanctuary of the church. And this parent says, I'm having some problems with this. Because, you know, like the little song they came home with about witches in the air and pump jack-o'-lanterns rolling down the hall. We never teach our children about this. We don't let our children know about this sort of stuff. And besides, then they ask us about death. And our son asked us about death the other day. And we said, well, it doesn't matter because, you know, you cast aside your old body when you die. And then you go to heaven and you get a new body. And this is for a four-year-old. You know, I'm thinking to myself, Jesus, God, lady. You know, so the room got very quiet when this parent is talking about her problem with the church/school's celebration of Halloween. And they're having a potluck dinner the week of Halloween. And at the very bottom, it says, don't forget to bring a bottle of wine for the auction. I mean, this is, and these are not Unitarian Universalists either. This is mainstream. Oh, what the hell? It's Presbyterian. So, you know, bring a bottle of wine for the auction. It goes, you know, goes into the auction later, yada, yada, yada. Very, very decent, good people who practice their faith. And like I said, every once in a while, Molly will come home with a little Christian thing, a little prayer thing, a little, you know, and she just treats it so joyfully. And we just, you know, we go along with it. We go, yeah, that's great, honey. That's really good. So the woman is sitting there this morning talking about the evils of Halloween. Witches and spooks and haints and ghosts. And that's so the room got very quiet. And the principal, very diplomatically, says, well, I hear you. I hear what you're saying, Mrs. Blank. I hear what you're saying, and I understand. We always kind of look at Halloween as a fun time for the children, and, you know, yeah, you know, like fantasy versus reality, and you know, and the principal sat there and just kind of, but the woman who had complained, I could see her face was getting harder and harder and harder. At any minute, I thought she was going to call for an exorcism in the meeting. Like, oh, my God. Well, right in the middle of this, I don't know why I did this. And I chipped in my 2 cents worth. And I said, well, if I can add a little something here, I said, we really love this school. We like the way the academics are taught. We like the way the Christian faith is handled with the little kids and the celebrations of Christmas and Halloween. I said, I really appreciate the fact that the school focuses on Christmas as being the birth of this person named Jesus Christ and not on Santa Claus and all the stuff you can get. I said, now that's really saying something since Kathy and I are, you know, full-blown, unequivocal atheists. The room got even more quiet. I said, you know, when Molly comes home with her little prayers and little songs and things that she's learned, and it's not that frequently, you know, once in a while she'll mention it. I said, we like that. We think it's very nice. Because it develops in Molly a sense of love and compassion and caring. Well, the woman who complained about Halloween is now sitting there. I thought her face was going to crack. I've never seen such a rictus set in on somebody's expression. It was very, very scary. It was like, oh, my God, I'm in a room with two atheists. Ah! Well, it was wonderful. So the principal, now she's really on the spot. Over here, she's got one parent saying, well, I don't like this Halloween stuff. And over here, she's got two other parents saying, well, you know, we're real atheists, and we're sitting in a Presbyterian church. So the principal says, well, you know, that's one nice thing about the school, our diversity. I thought it was just great. Well, needless to say, we're going to keep close watch now and see if word gets around to any of the other parents, like, watch out for that Molly Malloy. her parents are atheists. Rah! I don't think so, though. We know and hang out with so many of the parents who send their kids there. And our kids are all friends. But not this one. That's the first time I've, I guess she's been at the other meetings. But
I thought she was going to throw a burning book at you.
I thought she was, too. Stick around. We have a little more. We have a little more church for you tonight. You're going to like it. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Set it up. That's me in the corner.
Fear of state religion, that's not what we're going for. We don't want for one governmental religion. Government will never, you know, say this is the religion. We're free from society for religion.
Hallelujah. 22 past the hour.
And be the bestest Christian boy.
Shut that kid up, please. Oh, my God. John in Seattle wrote about what Michelle Obama didn't say. John writes, with the chaotic rhetoric of this political season, most of us probably forget Michelle Obama's statement of being proud of the level of engagement of American people in the political process and how it was so drastically taken out of context. Remember when she made that statement? John writes, what hasn't received a hint of notoriety in the press is the words Michelle and Barack Obama won't or can't speak. Why is it suddenly so important for politicians to disassociate, even denounce, the Muslim religion? In a country that boasts freedom to the people, no country can compare to our freedoms. If that's true, then in a country built on a foundation of implied inclusiveness, what is so patriotic about a divisive political agenda that vilifies another, i.e. Muslim, religion? What religion, skin color, or other traits will fall into disfavor next week? As a follower of Catholicism who once stood for religious freedom, it is extremely disturbing to me to think of the personal peril I'd face for even exploring the Muslim faith. Forget about politicians being forced to distance themselves from the Muslim faith for fear of implications to terrorism. And one wonders how Keith Ellison ever got into office. How is it that a country of implied inclusiveness can so easily foment hatred, resulting in gas attacks on a Muslim prayer service, as in Detroit? And why are churches labeled liberal suddenly fair game to attack at gunpoint, as in Tennessee? Clearly, we need to examine homegrown so-called extremist ideologies to get at the root of terrorism before we can so easily apply such labels elsewhere. Like a malignant tumor, the battle lines on the so-called war on terror are becoming more and more brutally fortified within our own borders, and for reasons as ludicrous as the rationale that drove us to attack a country that had no connection to 9/11. The more America gives in to this newfound hatred, the more the ideology leading that led the attack on us on 9/11 will win. With the correct mindset, the so-called war on terror would never have materialized. America is better than this. By the way, can you recommend a decent mosque? John in Seattle. No, I can't, John, although there are a bunch of them here in Atlanta. Representative John Lewis. Oh, wait a minute. This would be a good point. Have we got time? No, we don't have time. We don't have time to bring up. What's the guy's name? Reverend. Some loon named Reverend Arnold Conrad. In Davenport, Iowa, on Saturday. Have we got time for this? Yeah, we can do it. Nah, let's wait. We'll do it when we come back. But anyway, he opened a McCain rally by threatening God. Now, I you don't believe me? Okay, we'll play it for you when we come back. But a threat to the Lord Almighty. In terms of the Christian faith, this guy's a Christian, says he is. And in the prayer, the Reverend Arnold Conrad says that God better see that McCain gets elected, or all those other false gods of the Obama supporters will look better than Reverend Conrad's God, who is the one true God. Yeah, it's nutty. Now, I'll tell you something. You know, for those of us who are out here on the fringe, you know, us wacko humanistic atheists who've been watching this stuff for years, it doesn't come as a surprise. This religious hatred that is fomented, and you don't have to be a humanistic atheist or anything of the sort. You don't have to be a humanist. You know, just read history and see all the damage that has been done in the name of religion. I'm not going to bore you today. I've done this so many times. I'm not going to do it tonight. But you got to hear this guy, and we'll play him for you when we come back. It's like all the stops are out. These people don't care anymore. You know. And I think about Germany in the 30s and how the Jew was demonized, and now the Muslim is being demonized. And we know what happened in Germany in the 30s, right? Anyway, stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
I don't care if it rains or freezes, long as I got my plastic Jesus riding on the dashboard of my car. Through my trials and tribulations and my travels through the nations, with my plastic Jesus I'll go far. Riding down the
doing things like working really, really hard to get a natural gas pipeline, about a $30 billion project.
It's about 25 before the hour. All right, I want to play this for you now. This is some real lunatic named the Reverend Arnold Conrad. I think his first name is Reverend. His middle name is Arnold. His last name is Conrad. Davenport, Iowa, 2 days ago, McCain rally, I guess was inside a church. Looking at the video, it looks like it's inside a church. And he threatens, this loon threatens his own God. That's pretty risky business, isn't it? I mean, if you really believe this stuff, to threaten your own God is a little strange. You know, all this makes me nostalgic for the day Sarah Palin stood in her own psycho church and let that crazy African preacher lay hands on her and drive out all the witches. I mean, and keep her safe from all the witches. This is crazy business. This is mental illness. Now listen to this pastor. There's a little bit of a preamble. All this is in a prayer. He's asked to come up and give the invocation. He's giving a prayer. Listen to this.
And Lord, we just appeal to you for this event. We want to ask your blessing on our time together today. Please energize Senator McCain as he seeks to share his vision and what he thinks we need to do for the problems that we face as a country. And Lord, help us to be good listeners, ready to hear what he has to share. I would also add, Lord, that your reputation is involved in all that happens between now and November.
Uh-oh.
Because there are millions of people around this world praying to their God, whether it's Hindu, Buddha, Allah, that his opponent wins. For a variety of reasons. And Lord, I pray that you would guard your own reputation, because they're going to think that their God is bigger than you if that happens. So I pray that you would step forward and honor your own name in all that happens between now and Election Day. Oh, Lord, we just commit this time to you. Move among us. Make your presence very well felt as we are gathered here today. In Jesus' name I pray.
Oh, my goodness. Reverend Arnold Conrad threatening God Almighty because, you know, those other gods, the God, you know, Hindu, that God Hindu and that God Buddha. I didn't know Buddha. I thought Buddha was simply an enlightened human being like, oh, I don't know. Let me think. Jesus. But the God Hindu. Hey, Reverend, the Hindu faith has a whole bunch of gods. But it's incredible. Did you hear? I mean, do you hear what they're doing? These are people. This has to be a mainstream denomination. I mean, I don't think McCain is going to walk into some snake handling congregation and say, yeah, bring me the burlap bag. I want to try that. I don't think that's going to happen. I think this, you know, this is probably Methodist, a Lutheran, the Church of God, Church of Christ. I don't know. Don't email me now and tell me the one I just mentioned is extremely liberal and would have a freak like this in the pulpit. I don't know these denominations from each other. But this to me is relatively nuts. You know what I'm saying? It is absolutely insane. And doesn't it say in the Old Testament about not taking the name of the Lord thy God in vain? You know, I get emails from people who say, well, you said goddamn the other night. I break it into two syllables. I mean it, God that I don't believe in, damn that situation. That's all. And I think people like the Reverend Wright who used it the same way. And I get emails from people who say, well, you take the Lord's name in vain every night. No, I don't. In the first place, how do you take an imaginary being's name in vain? That's kind of crazy, too. But let's stipulate, okay, it's your faith, your religion, you're very pissed off because I say the goddamn word. And so you write me an email and you say, well, you're taking the Lord's name in vain. No, I'm not. I'm not. This guy is, though. This guy is. Can you imagine? We're talking about the God of the Old Testament here, right? Because the Bible is inerrant to these people. Everything in the Bible, including the talking snake and the flood and yada yada, and Moses had to round up two Anopheles mosquitoes to make sure malaria continued. All of this stuff, you see, all of this stuff is this entire story that you find in the Judeo-Christian tradition, all of it boils down to one thing. Don't, I mean, of the Ten Commandments, aren't six or seven of them about don't piss off God? Don't do anything that's going to anger the cloud being. Because if you do, you talk about thunder and lightning, you ain't seen nothing. I mean, how many times you want the dude to destroy the world because you people piss him off? So this guy stands up there and threatens God. God, your reputation's at stake. Whoa. About that time, I'm surprised the congregation didn't just run out of the church. I mean, just flee immediately, because obviously the hairy thunderer is going to toss down about 40 billion megawatt lightning bolts right at this little pissant who's standing there threatening God. Your reputation's at stake, God. Oh, well. John Lewis, whose district I used to live in, I've known John Lewis, Representative John Lewis, for 25 years. You don't live in Atlanta and hang out with certain people without knowing John Lewis. I've known him for a long time. Extremely decent man. One of the March on Selma people, or March from Selma, you know what I'm talking about, the Edmund Pettus Bridge. He was beaten severely, hosed, fire hosed, practically eaten alive by German shepherds on the ends of leashes held by white cops in the South. And let me tell you something, it's impossible to unstereotype a white Southern Georgia sheriff or cop. You can't every stereotype you've ever seen is absolutely true, absolutely right on the money, okay? John Lewis, who is a moral force, who is an ethical force, who is a decent man, who's just as kind as can be. Lewis said the negative tone of the Republican presidential campaign reminded him of the hateful atmosphere, I should say, that George Wallace fostered in Alabama in the 60s. Now, there is a clear statement of opinion laced with fact. John Lewis's opinion laced with fact. George Wallace, even though he repented repeatedly before he wound up on his deathbed, after he was shot by Arthur Bremer, he had a lot of time to sit in his own urine and his own feces in his wheelchair in Montgomery. George Wallace did. A lot of time to sit there and think about the hate that he fostered. And Wallace, you know, recanted, repented, asked for forgiveness of black folk. One assumes it was an honest, legitimate a plea for forgiveness. So John Lewis couples an historic fact that George Wallace fostered all sorts of racial hatred and an atmosphere of racial hatred in the 60s, coupled that with the opinion of Representative Lewis that the negative tone of the Republican presidential campaign reminds him, Lewis, of Wallace's attitude. Now, so far, we're on real solid ground, right? Huh? An opinion based on fact, a personal feeling. But John McCain, the next day, called Representative Lewis's remarks, quote, shocking and beyond the pale. Ah! My God. And what Lewis said is, quote, George Wallace never threw a bomb, he never fired a gun, but he created the climate and the conditions that encouraged vicious attacks against innocent Americans who were simply trying to exercise their constitutional rights. Right? End quote. Isn't that right? Yep, that's right. John McCain calls that statement shocking. Lewis went on, quote, because of this atmosphere of hate, four little girls were killed on Sunday morning when a church was bombed in Birmingham, Alabama, end quote. Right? Any untrue historical allusions there? Huh? No? It's all true? That was the 16th Street Baptist Church, September 15th, 1963? Huh? Four little girls blown to pieces while they were in Sunday school. Late Saturday, John Lewis released another statement saying it was not his intention or desire to directly compare McCain or Palin to Wallace. He said, my statement was a reminder to all Americans that toxic language can lead to destructive behavior.
And the choir kept singing of freedom. Noise shook the ground, and people all over the earth turned around. For no one recalled a more cowardly.
The course of this conflict is not known, yet its outcome is certain. God is not neutral.
And if you remember, Alex in Chicago sent this, a couple of you did, but I grabbed Alex's here. Hey, Mike, just thought I'd remind you that when McCain was asked by Rick Warren at that so-called debate, what three people he would seek advice from if he became president, McCain gave Representative John Lewis as one of those people. Well, yeah, but that was before McCain consigned his own soul over to the foggy, dark side, right? He did that when he picked Palin. God. Late Saturday, Representative John Lewis issued another statement saying it was not his intention or desire to directly compare McCain or Palin to Wallace. He said, "My statement was a reminder to all Americans that toxic language can lead to destructive behavior." He added, quote, "I am glad that Senator McCain has taken some steps to correct divisive speech at his rallies. I believe we need to return to civil discourse in this election about the pressing economic issues that are affecting our nation," end quote. But, John, that's not going to happen. And that's because the other John has and his hoe from Wasilla, they have no platform. There is nothing, absolutely nothing a Republican can run on except negativity and destruction. That's all they've got. That's everything. McCain's own people said they're going to stay away from the economic issue because if the focus becomes the economic issues, they're dead meat. Well, they're dead meat anyway. But McCain could no more handle a discussion about the economy than his hoe could. None of them can. There's nobody in the Republican camp that can do it. And trying to paint McCain as a maverick. That was Brett Maverick and Bart Maverick. I mean, it's a goddamn television program. I'm a maverick. No, you're not. You're a freak. You confessed to all sorts of stuff when you were in the North Vietnamese a prison because they tortured you. You confessed to bombing a school. You confessed to mass murder. You're not a maverick. You're not a maverick at all. You're just what you are. Obama's campaign spokesman Bill Burton said John Lewis was on target in ways other than a direct comparison to George Wallace. Although, what's the problem? But you see, this is the political season. They all have to be very, very careful. The good guys have to be very, very careful about what they're saying. Bill Burton, the campaign spokesman for Obama, said, quote, "John Lewis was right to condemn some of the hateful rhetoric that John McCain himself personally rebuked just last night, as well as the baseless and profoundly irresponsible charges from his own running mate that the Democratic nominee for president of the United States, quote, pals around with terrorists," end quote. Yeah, you know, it's okay. It's okay, right? It's okay for the hoe from Wasilla to stand up there and say, "Well, yeah, yeah, Obama, yeah, you betcha, he pals around with terrorists, you betcha, huh?" But for a decent human being, not a hoe, but a decent human being, to say, "Look, that kind of language, got three little girls bombed to death in Birmingham in church," not to mention the untold numbers of black folk who were lynched or dragged behind a pickup truck until their bodies came apart. And these people stand up there and say this. They know what they're doing. These Republicans know what they're doing. They're the most hate-filled people I think I've ever run across. This current clutch. Now, I posted on my mini blog today that you can see at MikeMalloy.com. There are links to two videos, two quick videos, which will show you a couple more examples of the filth that exists inside the minds of the McCain supporters. And McCain and his hoe do nothing but promote that. They don't repudiate it. Oh, McCain said, "Well, he's not an Arab. He's a good American." Oh, give me a break, John. You hope. That people think of Barack Obama as an Arab or a Muslim or a terrorist because you have linked all of this together with Barack Obama. And your hoe has the audacity. And all of these religious, these so-called Christians, they stand up there and condemn an entire religious group who shares the same prophets, the same omnipotent being. And by the way, LaShonda sent me an email, said, the people that are saying you're taking the Lord's name in vain, God has no name. You know God is not that being's name. You know, I'm playing along now, okay? God is not that being's name. And besides the Jews, the Christians, and Muslims, it's all the same. It's unknowable. The name is unknowable. Yeah, oh my God. Driving me crazy. Anyway, you know, John Lewis said, quote, as public figures with the power to influence and persuade, Senator McCain and Governor Palin are playing with fire. And if they are not careful, that fire will consume us all. They are playing a very dangerous game that disregards the value of the political process and cheapens our entire democracy. We can do better. The American people deserve better, end quote. And for that, this brain-dead freak, cancer boy McCain, said that those remarks were shocking and beyond the pale. He said, his expanded comment, McCain said, quote, I'm saddened that John Lewis, a man I've always admired, would make such a brazen and baseless attack on my character and the character, here it comes, of the thousands of hardworking Americans who come to our events to cheer for the kind of reform that will put America on the right track, end quote. You see what the pig bastard does? You see what he does? Huh? Oh, boy. All right. I got a lot of cussing in this first hour. We'll try for a little bit more next hour. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Six past the hour. This is the Malloy program on Nova M Radio. Now, apparently, McCain is starting to have that transcendental moment that so many people experience when they are either A, in the throes of religious ecstasy, or B, rushing headlong into Alzheimer's or some sort of senility, because McCain now is hearing voices. At least he says he is. I don't know if we should believe him any more than we should believe anything that comes out of his mouth. He is, after all, a Republican and a very mentally screwed up man to begin with. But being interviewed on CNN, McCain now claims that the kind of people who show up at his and Sarah Palin's rallies are now showing up at Obama or Biden rallies and calling McCain a terrorist and a murderer and a baby killer and all the things that you hear at the McCain-Palin rallies. He says that hate mongers at Obama hate mongers at Obama rallies are calling him, McCain, a terrorist, using the same kind of wretched rhetoric that his own supporters fling at Obama constantly. He's either hearing voices, or maybe it's just feedback sounds from his miracle ear device. I have no idea, but you can bet your ass that if there was even one example of that sort of catcalling and threatening going on at an Obama rally, it would be all over Free Republic, all over the filthy, disgusting Fox News channel, all over YouTube, and surprise, surprise, there really is nothing.
We've heard people in the crowd screaming things like terrorist, traitor, when you talked about Senator Obama, and worse.
I've heard the same thing. I've heard the same thing at unfortunately at Senator Obama's rallies being said about me.
Really? Well, when? Where? what city, what state, what day of the week was it, where in the campaign, when did it happen, John, you lying son of a bitch. Ah. And by the way, one of the links that you'll find at my website before the program's over tonight, we usually link most of the topics that we do on the program, but there is a lengthy article from thenationinstitute.org, and it's written by Sidney Shanberg. Remember Sidney Shanberg, Pulitzer Prize winning reporter, whose reporting from Cambodia resulted in the movie The Killing Fields? Remember Sidney Shanberg? He points out in the current issue in the current issue of The Nation, not the current issue, the October 6th issue, but the lengthy piece is at thenationinstitute.org, which we've got linked for you. But he points out how McCain has been just crazed about the POW issue, the Vietnam POW issue. Now, by crazed, I mean insulting to families who have MIAs, missing in action, POWs, people who were never accounted for at the end of our slaughter in Vietnam, our attack on another innocent country. McCain has gone out of his way to prevent the families of POWs still missing or MIAs still unaccounted for from getting any sort of satisfaction. McCain was instrumental in amending something called the Missing Service Personnel Act, which was strengthened. It had been around for a while, I think in 1991. In 1995, that act was strengthened by POW advocates to include criminal penalties against, here's what it says, quote, any government official who knowingly and willfully withholds from the file of a missing person any information relating to the disappearance or whereabouts or status of that person, end quote. Any information. Any government official who does that is committing a crime. A year later, according to Sidney Shanberg, in a closed House Senate conference on an unrelated military bill, McCain, at the orders from the Pentagon, Senator McCain attached what Shanberg calls a crippling amendment to the act, stripping out its only enforcement teeth, the criminal penalties, and reducing the obligations of commanders in the field to speedily search for missing men and report the incidents to the Pentagon. That was all taken out. Now, McCain argued that keeping the criminal penalties would have made it impossible for the Pentagon to find staffers willing to work on the POW-MIA matters. That's a weird argument to make. Were staffers only willing to work if they were allowed to conceal POW records? Is that what McCain is saying? By eviscerating the law, McCain gave his stamp of approval to the government policy of debunking the existence of live prisoners of war or people still missing in action in Vietnam who may or may not be alive. But the remains are important to the people who lost their family members there. McCain has insisted again and again that all the evidence has been woven together not by fact but by unscrupulous deceivers to create an insidious and unpatriotic myth. He calls it the work of, quote, the bizarre rantings of the MIA hobbyists, end quote. Hobbyist? Someone whose son or father or brother or nephew or cousin went to Vietnam in our war of aggression, never returned, nothing, no body, no remains, nothing, and they're concerned, and they want their loved one, the remains, if it's just a finger, God damn it, or a button off his uniform, or some DNA material, something. And McCain calls them hobbyists. M-I-A, hobbyists. Now, you VFW people, you American Legion people, you veterans who are listening, you're telling me and your friends that you support this son of a bitch who calls people who simply want an accounting of their loved one, that the American government under a Democratic and a Republican president sent off to murder and die. And all they want is an accounting, and McCain calls him MIA hobbyist. And you veterans who support this sick son of a bitch, you're going to tell me you continue to support him? You think this guy has the interests of veterans or their families at heart? Oh, please. Please. And I think it's common knowledge that McCain has regularly vilified those who keep trying to pry out from this government classified documents. He calls them hoaxers, charlatans, conspiracy theorists, and get this, dime store Rambos. That's what McCain calls the family members. Maybe it's a 40-year-old young man who last saw his father when he was 5 or 4, and his father went over to Vietnam and never came back. And all this kid who is now an adult wants is an accounting. And John McCain calls him a charlatan, a conspiracy theorist, a dime store Rambo. Nice. Huh? Family members who have personally pressed McCain to end the secrecy have been treated to his legendary temper. In 1996, he roughly pushed aside a group of POW family members who had waited outside a hearing room to appeal to him, including a mother in a wheelchair. And the only explanation McCain has ever offered for his leadership on legislation that seals off from public view POW information is that he believes the release of this information would only stir up fresh grief for the families of those who were never accounted for in Vietnam. So if the families who want an accounting, if they get an accounting, it's just going to stir up fresh grief. This is a vampiric, lying, degenerate son of a bitch who is running with a hoe from Wasilla, Alaska, and there's a single veteran out there who would vote for him?
Don't love God.
If you don't love your neighbor, if you gossip about him, if you never have mercy, if he gets into trouble and you don't try to help him, then you don't love your neighbor.
Then you
don't love God.
I think God's will has to be done in unifying people and companies to get that gas line built. So pray for that, and we can work together to make sure God's will be done here.
Yeah, okay. Sydney Shanberg, lengthy article at nationinstitute.org. I have it linked, or will have it linked, at my website before the evening is over. And a shorter version is in the current issue of the October 8th issue of The Nation that talks about McCain's efforts to absolutely and utterly deep six any effort to locate the remains of POWs, MIAs. Shanberg goes on to say, of the scores of POW families I've met over the years, only a few have said they want the books closed without knowing what happened to their men. All the rest say that not knowing is exactly what grieves them. See, McCain says, well, we got to shut the books on this because keeping, you know, continuing to look just grieves the families. Well, the families say otherwise. But, you know, McCain doesn't give a goddamn what POW families say. He doesn't care what veterans' families say. He doesn't care. Shanberg adds, it's not clear whether the taped confession McCain gave to his captors to avoid further torture has played a role in his post-war behavior. That confession was played endlessly over the prison loudspeaker system at Hoa Lo, the prison, to try to break down other prisoners, and was broadcast over Hanoi's state radio. Reportedly, he confessed to being a war criminal who had bombed a school and other civilian targets. The Pentagon has copies of the confession, but will not release them. Also, no outsider I know, Shanberg writes, that I know of has ever seen a non-redacted copy of McCain's debriefing when he returned from captivity, which is classified but can be made public by McCain. In his best-selling 1999 autobiography, Faith of My Fathers, McCain expressed guilt at having broken under torture and given the confession. He writes, quote, "I felt faithless and couldn't control my despair," end quote. He says he made two what he calls feeble attempts at suicide. And tellingly, he says he lived in, his word, dread that his father would find out about the confession. He writes, quote, "I still wince when I recall wondering if my father had heard of my disgrace," end quote. Now, remember who his dad was. Admiral John McCain, head of the Pacific Fleet during the Vietnam era. McCain still didn't know the answer when his father died in 1981. He got his answer 18 years later in his 1999 memoir, Faith of My Fathers. McCain writes, quote, "I only recently learned that the tape had been broadcast outside the prison and had come to the attention of my father," end quote. So Shanberg then says, does this hint at explanations for McCain's efforts to bury information about prisoners or other disturbing pieces of the Vietnam War? Does he suppress POW information because its surfacing rekindles his feelings of shame? On this subject, Shanberg writes, all I have are questions. But even without answers to what may be hidden in the recesses of someone's mind, one thing about the POW story is clear. If American prisoners were dishonored by being written off and left to die, that's something the American public ought to know about. And to that, I will add, amen. Now, you can read this entire Shanberg article. It's available at nationinstitute.org. I'll have it linked at my website later on this evening. McCain is so far beyond any expectation that the American public might have for leadership qualities. And I mean beyond, on the wrong side of beyond, back in the muck, the swamp, the place where decisions can't be made, where leadership can't be exhibited. That's McCain. And this is the reason, I think, that his negative numbers are so high, A, B, and that's the reason so many people who attend his rallies are such maniacs, such loons, absolute howlers, because they also are completely they're incapable of doing anything, these McCain supporters, except huddling in their tract homes or wherever the hell they live. Not that there's anything wrong with a tract home, but you know what I'm saying. Huddling, wondering when the Muslims are going to come and eat their children. Wondering when the Arabs are going to drop nuclear bombs on the United States. It is so disgusting. I am so sick of cowardice. Aren't you? Aren't you just sick of it? Don't you want to walk up to one of these bullying cowards and just smack them right across the face and say, man up a little bit, you cowardly son of a bitch. Stand on your feet. Quit groveling. Quit whining. Like Phil Graham said, maybe, huh? Only for a different reason. Quit blaming Islam for your own fear, for your own inadequacy as a human being, as an American, as a Christian, whatever it is. Quit blaming Islam. And when you're finished blaming Islam, what are you going to do? Blame the Jews? The Jews are always a fallback, right? You can always go back to the Jews once you get tired of blaming the Muslims, right? You cowardly punks. I get so sick of it. Don't you?
Freedom of religion. I reckon that means that we must tolerate the atheist and Jew. But Jesus is the man and our salvation. And every war we wage is in his name. We think his Bible should be taught in every nation. And we'll bomb anyone who doesn't feel the same. Welcome to Jesus' land, where we all love thy neighbor if thy neighbors understand. We won't let too many Mexicans across the Rio Grande.
Don't know much about history, don't know much biology, don't know much about
about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took.
What other Supreme Court decisions do you disagree with?
Well, let's see. There's, of course, in the great history of America, there have been rulings that, going through the history of America, there would be others.
Yeah, I'm sure there would be. 25 before the hour. It is time, once again, ladies and germs, for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Gather around, kiddies. Everybody all snug in your jammies, huh? Uncle Mike's Story Corner is at hand. Tonight's Uncle Mike's Story Corner comes from a friend back east. Actually, it comes from Linda Coleman Bridgeforth. Now, let me preface this by saying when I was in elementary school and then to high school, I used to be very jealous because my black friends belonged to an organization, some of them did, called Jack and Jill. That's what they called it, Jack and Jill. Now, it was odd because when I was a kid growing up, we had a magazine called Jack and Jill, but it never showed people of color, just a magazine about white folks for white folks. So when I heard about Jack and Jill, the full title is Jack and Jill of America Incorporated, I believe. When I heard about that, when I heard my black friends were members of Jack and Jill, I want to join. Can I join? And they had to tell me no because I couldn't. because I was white. Sorry, Mike, but you're white. Right now, I went to their website. They have a membership base of about 10,000 families. It's the oldest and largest African-American family organization in the United States. And its sole function is to ensure that all children have the same opportunities in life. And, of course, they focus on children in the African-American community. But I can remember as a kid just being so, like, why can't I? Where's my white privilege? Why can't I? What? I can't join Jack and Jill. Why? Because you're not a Negro. Why white America perhaps fears Michelle more than Barack? And this is excerpted from a Jack and Jill politics newsletter. As hard as it is to accept a black president, it's even harder to accept a black first lady. The first lady has always held a beloved, sentimental mother-wife of the nation symbolism. Conservatives are not ready to have to look at this very black woman with her degrees and her fierceness and see her as the epitome of the American mother slash wife. This will be a first for white people. They do not want this black woman in the White House as their first lady. That New Yorker cartoon was actually about Michelle. She was its focal point. Look closely. She's the leader, the one starting the revolution they want you to imagine. MSNBC's Chris Matthews said in the course of covering the Obama candidacy, Barack Obama brings none of the bad stuff, you know? Now, by bad stuff, he meant the legacy of whites enslaving Africans in this country, keeping them as second-class citizens until 1965, a mere 11 years before this country celebrated its 200th anniversary. You know, the original sin, or the birth defect, as Condoleezza Rice calls it. Barack escapes this bad stuff only because his mother was white and may have had ancestors involved in the slave trade. And also because Barack's father was not African-American. He was full-blooded African, and therefore Barack had no ancestors enslaved by America. And so the white guilt factor is missing when they think of him. However, no such luck with Michelle. Michelle Obama is a direct threat and a lightning bolt against white superiority because she's black, visibly black. But it's important to note she does not in any way, shape, or form contour to the acceptable black pathologies that enable white supremacy to sigh with relief. You know, welfare mother, fatherless child, druggie. Michelle was raised in a neighborhood, in a home, with two parents. No child revolving in and out of jail, raised by a black man who not only provided for his family, but did so with a disability. Her mother had a working-class job, secretary, but it was taken only after she had seen her youngest child settle into high school. Michelle Obama's poise, her confidence, her aura that was created by that humble black man who, by all accounts, adored her. He told her that she's worthy. And so, when you have that told to you by the first man who loves and protects you, your father, you seek that validation in your choice of mate. And you'll settle for nothing less. And Michelle hasn't. Michelle Obama doesn't fit any of the acceptable black pathologies. And when you don't fit the acceptable black pathology, then you must be destroyed. Michelle Obama has become the face of the black America whose existence is routinely denied by this country. Think about it. In one generation, the face of this so-called invisible America has gone from living on the top floor of a bungalow to the possibility of living in the White House. And yet Michelle Obama refuses to say, "I'm special," in order to give white America its usual security blanket. You know that she's one of the exceptions rather than the rule. So what should be done? Beat her into submission. Michelle Obama represents everything we black women want our daughters to be. When we stand up for her, we stand up for ourselves. No other women in the world are more neglected and abused as African women, period. Michelle looks like our daughters. Her daughters look like us. We love the way Barack looks at her. We adore the way he looks at his daughters. The Obamas represent the hope that we can be loved by our men and they will support us in whatever we do. Little African American girls need a vision and dream of what it's like to be loved by a man who looks just like them. Is America ready for a first lady who looks like her, a regular black woman? Not a passable biracial curly-haired girl that they call black, but a regular black woman from the south side of Chicago with dark skin? Is she going to be the face of the woman on the largest pedestal in the country? A self-confessed, loud-mouthed black woman? If the Obamas succeed, it turns white supremacy upside down. And not because a black man is in the White House, but because a black woman will be there who didn't have to come in the back door to lie in bed with the president. Another episode of Uncle Mike's Story Corner, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. And our contributor tonight, Linda Coleman Bridgeforth. I like that. And thanks to the friend back east who sent it to me. Okay. Back east? Okay. All right, what else we got for you tonight, ladies and germs? Let me see. Prairie 2. Have I got time? Yeah, I can do this. Prairie 2, who is rapidly becoming our economic correspondent on this program. Prairie 2 writes, "Hey, Mike, the stock market rebounded today, much the same way a dead cat bounces when it hits the sidewalk." The Europeans have poured a huge amount of cash into their banking system, but the U.S. Treasury has done nothing concrete, nor do they have a plan to do anything. The U.S. credit markets are still frozen, and it's starting to impact Main Street. GM closed a major assembly plant this morning and a metal stamping plant this afternoon, the first of many closings to come. Paul Krugman, who has been saying for some time that we were likely on the edge of a new Great Depression, today feels that he feels slightly less terrified. Of course, having won the Nobel for economics, he gets a check for €1 million. That would ease my terror, too. The Bush crime family avoided announcing any real plan today so as to get a few days free ride off the Europeans' actions. When the market tanks again on, say, Thursday, they'll announce some action, hoping to keep things going until November 4th. Then they'll have to deal with the fact that all the major banks are insolvent. Jesus. McCain started today's big town hall meeting by saying he would take questions at the end, but scurried off the stage without taking any. Either he couldn't bring himself to defend Obama against terrorism charges again, or perhaps he noticed that the audience had their newly issued 401k statements impaled on the tines of their pitchforks. No policy paper Obama could issue will sway voters the way those 401k statements will. Obama has come out with a plan to give relief to the common voter. McCain's plan to buy up mortgages has been quietly dropped. It seems, when said in the debate, that it was his idea, nobody else's, that he wasn't exaggerating. Nobody in his campaign seemed to have any idea how to explain it. McCain was supposed to reveal a bold new economic plan today, but somebody changed his mind about McCain's promise of a chicken in every pot and a Model T in every garage. Probably too socialist. Prairie 2. The way a dead cat bounces when it hits the sidewalk. Whoa. All right. We got a break here. Yeah, we do. I think we do. Do we? Yeah, all right. When we come back, you probably know Paul Krugman has won Nobel Prize for Economics. Professor at Princeton University and op-ed page columnist, New York Times. And I think that is pretty groovy. Of course, his main function, as far as I'm concerned, has been to be an unrelenting Bush crime family critic. That would be enough for me to vote for him. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
I was flying on UA-93. That shadow in the footage, it was probably me. I'm the rumor, I'm the doubt, I'm the lie. But you wouldn't stand near me if you didn't want to die. Everything you know is wrong.
Misinformation.
There's a first name.
I go to bed feeling the same way. I ain't nothing but tired. Man, I'm just tired and bored with myself. Hey there, baby. I could use just a little hope. You can't start a fire. You can't.
10 before the hour. Yeah, that's my favorite Springsteen song. I love it. Diana in Florida writes about protesters are not terrorists. She writes, we need to challenge calling William Ayers and other alleged associates of Barack Obama, quote, terrorists, end quote. Back in the 60s, there were many decent people strongly against the Vietnam War and strongly for civil rights for women and minorities. We called them activists and protesters, not terrorists. One of the things that disturbed me about the Patriot Act is that it classifies anyone interfering with the government, especially anyone protesting against the war, as terrorists, and subject to the loss of their civil rights. We must resist allowing the neocons to redefine protesters as terrorists. I'm a believer in nonviolent protest, Diana writes, so I don't condone resorting to violence. But even a violent protester whose aim is good has not descended to the level of being a terrorist. The motivation and the ends are different. Diana in Florida. Yeah, it just turns my stomach to hear the linking of Barack Obama with anyone who is involved in acts of civil disobedience, up to and including the planning of physical attacks against structures or people in this country. Because Barack Obama, again, you know, for the umpteenth time, he was 8, 9, 10 years old when this occurred. As far as the protesters themselves back in the 60s, I agree with Diana. I don't think anyone, and I've said this on this program, I don't think anyone can condemn or can condone acts of terror that cost people their lives, either directly or inadvertently. That's just not what, you know, unless you're involved in a civil war or involved in an insurrection against an occupier, if you are being occupied by a foreign presence, then I guess international law says you have the right to resist. If you're a POW, you have the right to resist. You have a right to try to escape. You have a right not to cooperate. If your country is being invaded by a monstrous military machine, don't you have the right to use whatever means are necessary, including bombing, murder, killing. Murder's a legal term. Bombing, killing, assassinating, whatever. But of course, the United States was not being invaded in the 60s. And, you know, for that reason alone, I felt that the violence against people was inexcusable, not allowable. Again, unless we're involved in an absolute, honest-to-God uprising, revolution, insurrection, call it what you want, or if we're being invaded. And to hear the McCain campaign, including his hoe from Wasilla, saying what they're saying, it just stinks of desperation. It reeks of the poverty of this Republican Party platform and these two candidates. It's just incredible. And then to hear the pod people out there who attend these rallies repeating this stuff as if it were received wisdom. Well, he's an Arab. Even McCain had to snatch the microphone away from that silly bitch. He's an Arab. He's an Arab. He's a Muslim. He's a terrorist. He's a killer. He's a baby killer. He's an Arab. He's a Muslim. He's a terrorist. He's a baby killer. These are Americans? These are people with whom I have to drink water and breathe air and live within the same borders. This is like living with crazed people who refuse to take their medication. You know, who just say, no, I'm nuts, I'm absolutely crazy, I'm bipolar, I'm schizophrenic, I'm delusional, whatever it is, and I don't want to get well, and I don't want to talk with a mental health expert, and all I want to do is just be crazy. Okay, there is the point of view. Thomas Saz who put out the point of view? Was it he or was it somebody else? Back in the 60s, that schizophrenia or delusions were simply a different way of looking at reality, and that those terms were political. Oh, bat snot. That's like saying polio is just a syndrome that doesn't mean anything. People can be crazy. I know that word is not fashionable. If you're a mental health worker, don't write to me. Please don't write to me. You know what I mean. I'm not pushing stereotypes. But the McCain followers are nuts. Absolutely crazy. All right. They're sociopaths. Does that make you all happier? They are sociopaths. And some of them border on psychopaths. And when I see those people, when I see them lined up to go into a McCain rally, and I think, why would John McCain want this filth? Asking him questions and hollering out death threats. What the hell has happened to McCain? Not that McCain was ever anything other than a mass killer. I mean, let's be real here. He was a war criminal. So, I don't know, sometimes I get shocked at my own shock. You know, why am I shocked about McCain? McCain's crazy. McCain's a sociopath. I didn't want my daddy to hear about my confession. Oh, Jesus, he would have keel-hauled me. You know, he was an admiral. He would have dragged me the full length of the hull of an aircraft carrier, and I probably would have drowned. I know I would have done that. Ah! But I confessed. I told my fellow prisoners to confess. Everybody confessed. You know why I did? Not because I bombed schools. Did I? I did? Well, collateral damage. But because they tortured me. They tortured him. And yet McCain, who says, I never bombed a school. I don't know how he knows that. And the only reason he confessed was because he was tortured. And yet McCain supports torture to get a confession. And anyone out there is going to tell me this crazed son of a bitch is not a crazed son of a bitch? Please.
story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon me now.
Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program on Nova M Radio. Okay. Let me see here. We never get to cover all the things that we'd like to. Let's do some phone calls here fairly quickly. The phone number is 800-989-1480. One quickie here. This is from Kay in San Francisco, and then we're going to go to your phone calls. Kay writes, during one of your segments last week, you referred to people who continue to vote Republican as suffering from a form of mental illness. You stated that only a trained clinician could explain why these people continue to cast votes that only ensure their elimination from the gene pool. The next day, I showed parts of the film 1776 in my history classes. This exchange between Mr. Dickinson of Pennsylvania and Mr. Hancock of Massachusetts really jumped out at me. This is from the musical number Cool, Cool, Considerate Men. This is from the Broadway show 1776. Dickinson, Mr. Hancock, you're a man of property, one of us. Why don't you join us in our minuet? Why do you persist in dancing with John Adams? Good Lord, sir, you don't even like him. Hancock. That is true. He annoys me quite a lot, but still I'd rather trot to Mr. Adams' new gavotte. Dickinson. But why? For personal glory? For a place in history? Be careful, sir. History will brand him and his followers as traitors. Hancock. Traitors, Mr. Dickinson? To what? The British crown or the British half-crown? Fortunately, there are not enough men of property in America to dictate policy. Dickinson. Perhaps not. But don't forget that most men without property would rather protect the possibility of becoming rich than face the reality of being poor. Kay writes, I think this goes a long way toward explaining why people continue to vote against their own best interests and how the ruling class successfully manipulates them into doing so. It's also very telling that the Nixon White House demanded that the entire Cool, Cool, Considerate Men number be cut from the film before its release in 1972. It obviously doesn't portray conservatives in a very flattering light. Kay. And she sent me a picture of some of her students in her class. All right, to your phone calls. Rapido. Tony is calling from Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Tony, welcome to the program.
Mike, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
Oh, good.
Good.
You just cracked me up. You can say ho better than any white man that I know. I mean, just like, oh, God, it kills me every night. But anyway, you got that right.
That's
and
funny.
She did go to Idaho University, didn't she?
Yeah, didn't she? She showed okay. Idaho, yeah.
But anyway, I just wanted to say, I totally agree with you. You know, these people are crazy. Now, I am a Christian. You mean you've had that conversation?
That's right. We've had it. We've had it.
Yeah, but you know what? Like you said, I know Pastor Wright personally,
mm-hmm.
the so-called, and the brother is on point,
right.
And he used to preach on it all the time. He even used God damn it.
Yeah, before. I know.
And like you said, it's when you are putting God into your mess,
mm-hmm.
that's using his name in vain. So you called it. Better than anybody I done heard in a long time. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
just it.
Yeah, I do. And to me, that was always the case. That's not something I just came to in the last 6 terrible months. I mean, that's something
right.
I knew as a younger person.
Exactly.
That taking the name of the Lord in vain.
Mm-hmm.
It was entirely different from using a slang or a curse. And like LaShonda wrote to me and said, you can't name the Christian divinity anyway. He or she or it is unnameless. That's why there are unpronounceable words in Hebrew or Aramaic
exactly.
that you can't say. You
mm-hmm.
just, only represent. Mm-hmm. the divinity. So I don't have any problem with that. I know it offends a lot of people, and I've said before, I understand how that can be offensive, and I understand if a lot of people hear that and go, I'm out of here. I understand. I understand exactly what you're saying.
But you're telling the truth, and the bottom line is they don't even know their own religion.
Well,
that's the problem with most of all these crazy right-wing, crazy folks. Like I said, if they read the same Bible I got, they would also see where it says the first shall be last and the last shall be first. They don't ever quote that one, do they?
No, they don't. They don't quote the one about it's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than a rich man enter into the gates of heaven.
There you go.
And that's why I cannot figure out this so-called prosperity Christianity. Where are they getting that?
I don't know.
That's nothing that Jesus Christ ever said.
No, he did.
He said exactly the opposite, as far as I know.
Exactly.
Oh, well, it's a crazy world, Tony.
Well, it is, but like I said, we done made it before, honey, and we're going to make it this time.
I hear you. Thanks, Tony.
All right.
All right, take care. All right, you too. Take care. Take care. Tom is calling from Orlando, Florida, listening on the Internet. Hey, Tom.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
I'm just calling to vent my frustration and disappointment. You know, I just tried to be brief. They told me I have only 2 minutes. It seems like Obama tries to follow Kerry's style so much from 2004. And I don't understand why he doesn't renounce McCain's criminal involvement and his cronies before and during savings and loan scandal time.
I think Barack Obama is operating within a bubble of reality that every black person and especially every black man has to operate in this country, and somebody
cannot
who
get angry.
I'm sorry?
Cannot get angry.
Well,
right?
Not only can't get angry, but isn't allowed to point out to white people their stupidity. I mean, a white person can point out to white people.
But look,
okay, go ahead. But I'm just saying, this is my only explanation. A black man saying, look, John McCain, even though he was cleared, I think he got a reprimand by the Senate, but he was just as guilty as of lobbying on behalf of Charles Keating as anybody was. I mean, come on. This was a big scandal back in the 80s. McCain is not, Mr. Snow White. He is as culpable as any of these Republican senators for these acts of I consider to be criminality. But Barack Obama doesn't dare. And he understands that. This is why Obama just moves right through this avalanche of ugliness. He doesn't stop. One of the reasons is because he's a black man that grew up in America, in the United States. Now, he was raised by a white mom and white grandparents. That doesn't matter. It matters a little bit, but it doesn't matter completely. He understands. He understands the way white people will never understand. I'm sorry?
I wish I had your piece with that subject. But, you know, last debate, there was discussion. McCain portrayed himself as a veteran's friend. He cut benefits for veterans.
Oh, yeah.
He's viable.
Yeah.
GI Bill, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, yet he didn't say that. He couldn't even sarcastically ask him. One more thing, you know, the Hannity, Sean Hannity,
yeah.
He made the entire program segment on Sunday.
I heard about
which
this,
which was a stake of lies. Just so
well. The guy he had on, and I'm drawing a blank on his name, is an absolute anti-Semite to begin with. Some of the things he said about Jews is just despicable. I mean, it's the kind of thing you expect to hear from, you know, the racist nutbags in this country, Jew this, Jew that. And Hannity puts this guy on as though. I didn't see the segment, but I read about it in today's New York Times. On the front page of today's New York Times, they have a big article about this freak. Not the Hannity. Hannity's just a mistake. But the guy.
Quick thing. The reason I brought it up is because when Obama doesn't bring McCain's attack, you know, during the remember the primaries when Hannity was supporting Mitt Romney.
Right. Right.
He created plethora of not garbage. This is regular, you know, currency the Hannity is, you know, using.
Yeah, hold on a second, Tom. I got to put you on hold for a second because I got to do a break here. We'll be right back.
time I turn on the TV,
there's hope.
Somebody's acting crazy,
there's hope.
You said it, it'll drive you crazy,
there's hope.
I'm taking back my power today,
there's hope.
Gas prices, they just keep on rising,
there's hope.
The government, they keep on lying.
And trade, we've got to see trade as opportunity, not as a scary thing.
We got a soundbite for we're going to play in a second, but we're talking with Tom right now. Let's go back to Tom, who called in from Orlando. Okay, Tom, where were we? We're about to wrap it up here. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll try really quick. You know, I'm just so frustrated that, you know, Obama's people don't bring all those accusations from Hannity that he used in 2000 against McCain.
Uh-huh.
There's a plethora of attacks, you know, in Hannity's archives. And also, you know, when I see how Obama plays so polite, measured, that I have a feeling that he's going to exactly lose like Kerry, especially if you add the Bradley factor on the top of it.
Well, I would disagree with that. And I'll tell you why, Tom, because Kerry had... I hate to agree with anybody on the other side of the aisle about this, but Kerry did have kind of a wimp factor. There were so many times that McCary, who was a combat vet, I'm not sure exactly what he did in that combat, but he was a combat vet, and he allowed himself to be rolled. Barack Obama is not being rolled. What he is doing is ignoring these swine. Why should, you know, here's the argument. I'd like to see Barack Obama just kick ass and take names like you. I really would. I'd like to see him drag out all the garbage.
You can do it politely.
But if he can float above it. You know, remember what Muhammad Ali talked about? Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. You understand what I'm saying? You know what that means. Float like a butterfly. Sting like a bee. Also, Muhammad Ali, the greatest athlete this country's ever produced, also practiced the application of rope-a-dope. You know, let these fools continue to pummel as much as they want, and when it's all over, who's going to be exhausted? Who's going to be exhausted? Who's going to be defeated? This psychopathic McCain is good. No, I think Barack Obama, I agree with you. I'd like to see him really plant his size 11s or whatever he wears right up John McCain's rear end. But what would that get him? He's a black man in a white racist country who happens to have gotten to the point where he's gotten to because a lot of white people have voted for him. And I think so many of those white people are just kind of chewing on their fingernails right now going, oh, damn, he might win, Lord. So, you know, I think Barack has got to just kind of, he's got to continue to do what he's doing. But, you know, he knows where he's at. He knows where he's at better than you and I know where he's at. You understand what I'm saying with that?
Yes. My closing question, really quick, you know, because those are great answers. Tell me, where do they breed monsters or snakes like Dick Morris?
Tom, if I had an answer to that, I would head over there with a fumigating machine and... you know, kill them all in their nests. Just like when the roach man comes out here to our house, you know. Wait a minute, I smell Tom DeLay. All right, have we got time to play this? All right, this is Tina Fey on Saturday Night Live. Doing a takeoff on the hoe from Wasilla, and then the hoe herself. No, is that not it? Kathy, open your mic and tell us what it is then.
Well, what it is actually is Wolf Blitzer on CNN and his little panel of people talking about the Tina Fey bit, playing it, and then the Sarah Palin actual
scene.
You have to understand that you people think they're going to hear Tina Fey first. It's actually going to be Wolf Blitzer.
Well, I was close. All right, go ahead, play it.
Here's a little clip from Saturday Night Live last night. Tina Fey portraying Governor Sarah Palin. Now, just watch this because I'm going to explain. I haven't seen anything like this in a while. Listen to this.
Ultimately, what the bailout does is help those that are concerned about the health care reform that is needed to help shore up our economy, to help... it's got to be all about job creation, too.
All right. Now, that was Tina Fey. But here's the real Sarah Palin earlier in the week in the interview with Katie Couric.
Ultimately, what the bailout does is help those who are concerned about the health care reform that is needed to help shore up our economy, helping the... Oh, it's got to be all about job creation, too.
All right, that was the first time, John, I've ever heard the parody on Saturday Night Live actually use exactly what was said during the course of the week. It was a rough week for her this week.
Not sure if that's art imitating life or life imitating art there as you watch. Look, everyone inside the McCain campaign will tell you, Wolf, in a private conversation, they thought that interview was simply a disaster. They won't say that publicly, but they will tell you that privately.
Oh, really? Well, you would know, wouldn't you, John? All right. That's extremely funny, where Tina Fey uses precisely the words, and it sounds like parody. Pamela in Tucson and Northwest Washington writes, Mike, I believe that Obama is the, quote, Jackie Robinson, end quote, of politics. That's why he's not fighting back. At the same time, the McCain-Palin rallies are just one rope short of a lynch mob. Woo, Pamela. Yeah, I've been getting that feeling, too. All right, we'll be back after the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Our demise, this pack of lies. Is Sarah Palin, just because you're good at shooting doesn't mean you have the ammo to negotiate with Putin? Are you on coke? This country's up in smoke. Oh, what a joke. Oh, if you become VP, oh, what will it mean for me? Oh, if you become VP, oh, what will it mean for me? Ticket to the bridge. Just because I can see the moon doesn't make me an astronaut. You loon, your foreign policy expertise is poo. Do you really think a woman...
examples in his 26 years of pushing for more regulation.
I'll try to find you some and I'll bring them to you.
It's about 25 before the hour. DM writes, regarding the Arab remark, remember when the woman at the McCain rally said, he's an Arab. DM writes, as an Arab American Vietnam veteran, I wasn't upset by the bigots. Can't trust him, he's an Arab. What was upsetting to me and unbelievable to me was that no one addresses the issue of McCain's dim-witted comeback to her expected remark. Quote, no, he's no Arab, my friends, he's a citizen, a family man, end quote. What's this crap? This is an incredible slur on Arabs in general and Arab Americans in particular, DM. Yeah, I think I address that issue, but yeah. I don't think you'll hear anyone in mainstream media talking about that because there is apparently, I'm just guessing, somebody sent out the memo that said don't do anything to defend people of Arab descent, certainly not practicing Muslims in the United States. It's crazy. It's just crazy. I remember, and it didn't just start here with McCain and Palin, or with the attack by the bombers on September 11th, 2001. You all remember the Timothy McVeigh, the bombing of the Murrah Federal Building. I mean, they were pursuing people of Arab descent all the way to Europe and dragging them back, kicking and screaming. And it was an American, white, conservative, Christian, veteran, terrorist. Let me say that again. A white, conservative, American, veteran, terrorist, who killed 168 people in Oklahoma City. No, we don't talk about that. Nah, let's talk about the Arabs. Like John Lewis said, you play with fire like this, and it's very, very, very dangerous. You know, somebody better let somebody know. I don't know who to let know. I don't know who to go to with a message, and that is that white Christians are not the dominant racial / cultural / religious group on earth. They're not. They really aren't. Now, between the United States and the Russians, white Christians, they have enough firepower to wipe out the rest of the earth 1,000 times over. No question about that, or the entire earth 1,000 times over. But white Christians are not the cultural, religious, racial dominant in terms of numbers. It's just not true. And I don't know who to go to with that news flash. I don't know who to go up to and say, yo, look, quick, pay attention here just for a second. Listen up, listen, word. You got to stop. You got to stop this. You have to stop. You know, every time I hear Cesar Chavez or somebody from the Chinese government or somebody from an African country or somebody from Central Asia, the non-white part of Central Asia or Southeast Asia, point out something that emphasizes or underlines the fact that this is not the American century. It really is. I mean, we can blow up the whole world if we want to, but it's no longer the American century. What does that mean? It's no longer the European American century. Maybe that's the way to put it. But I don't know who to go to with that newsflash. I don't know who to go to and say, you know, It's time for white folks to take a breath and sit down. Just sit down for a minute. Sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down. And take a look. And maybe change the tactics that have been used for. And of course, maybe it's too late. I mean, there may be enough so-called people of color out there. And why do we call them people of color? Because we start from a position of white folks. That's why. You ever notice that?
we're white, so anybody who's not white is a person of color.
But somebody needs to take that message to whoever's in control. I don't know who's in control of white people anymore. I used to know, or thought I knew, who was in control of white people. But I don't know any longer. I really don't. And somebody needs to get a message, you know, got to get a message to whoever is in charge. Somebody's in charge. Somebody's always in charge, right? Huh? You know, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, white folks are convinced that every night or sometime, maybe on Saturdays, you know, all the black folks get together and decide how they're going to get over on white people the following week. You know, that's why we whites always say, well, you know, those Negroes, you know. But truthfully, it's just the reverse. Now, when I was a kid, you know, we always knew that there were white people someplace who were making all the rules and making all the decisions. And we just went along with this. Okay. All right. But we knew that was happening. We knew it. We didn't need no Ovaltine Captain Midnight decoder ring either to figure it out. We knew. But I don't know who's in charge anymore, so I'm not sure what to do. Not sure. We'll figure it out, though, right? We always have. White folks have always figured it out. Always. We'll figure it out. Back to your phone calls. Silas is calling from Tennessee, listening on Sirius. Hey, Silas.
Hey, all these McCain supporters. I wonder if they know what color the military is, because. My father was in the military. He was a chaplain. Mm-hmm. And I spent the first 18 years of my life in the military being dragged all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad, when you told that story about someone about 40 years old and their father going to Vietnam, well, my dad came back, luckily. But I was there when I was 5 years old at the airport in Nashville saying, you know, and my dad mm-hmm. saying he didn't know if he's going to come back or not, you know.
Right, right.
The grunts, that's what they call them.
Sure.
Are predominantly people of color. You know, and here's McCain up here, you know, spewing out his stuff and his people. I mean, the people who are backing our military now, they're Arabic. They speak Arabic. We're looking for people who speak Arabic, you know?
Sure.
And they don't understand what humanity is.
No, you're right. You're absolutely
so,
right, Silas.
Anyway, I wanted to comment on that these people are so out of touch that if a white boy from Tennessee here has to go in the military, mm-hmm. he may have to take orders from a person of color above him.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
there is no color in the military. So that's the way it should be in the country. We need someone, commander in chief. You know,
mm-hmm.
we need a brother in there who's commander in chief because there's never been one before,
mm-hmm.
and they can do just as good a job. They can do a better job than what's in there right now. That's for sure, right?
I hear you, Silas. All right,
so,
thanks a lot, man. I appreciate you checking in. That was one of the reasons that, of course, and I'm sure you know this, Silas, one of the reasons that the military was kept segregated until Harry Truman ordered integration was, how would a white person, Lord, take an order from a black man?
Oh!
What? That Negro's telling me what to do? And it was just it was just too much for most whites, if not all whites, but certainly Southern whites to handle that. And especially when you stop and consider that as of World War II, most of the military bases that were built in the South for one very simple reason, sort of. The weather. You know, you get much more training out of people in Columbus, Georgia than you could in, outside International Falls, Minnesota, for God's sake. But, yeah, that was you're right, Silas. I think the military, and, I was never in the military, so I'm only guessing from people, close friends, family members who did serve. The military was a leveler. Not that there wasn't racism in the military. There still is. And anti-Semitism and anti-Arabism, there still is. But, you know, when somebody's trying to kill your ass and your other body parts, too, you're not going to stop if the guy next to you is helping to defend your position or your perimeter. You're not going to stop and say, wait a minute. Are you black? Wait a minute. Are you gay? Wait a minute. Are you an Arab? Wait a minute. Are you, well, what are you? Are you an atheist? Wait a minute. Oh, you're one of those? Well, get out of my foxhole. I'll stand here and die by myself. Yeah, okay.
Somewhere I can even spell the name of. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your sky. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American.
It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to our crew, as usual, Ian Huff, who engineered and answered your calls, Ben Birch, our podcast and technical manager. Sharon Gordy is our military affairs correspondent. Our ethics advisors are Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf. Executive producer is Catherine Bay. And by the way, listeners in Phoenix now have an alternative to hear Nova M programs. Welcome. Once again, we did last week, 1190 AM KNUV in Phoenix. Quick email here from Melina in Burbank, California. Regarding Muhammad Ali, she writes, Michael, not only is Muhammad Ali the finest athlete this country has produced, he's an exceptional man. I've always been impressed by his clarity of reasoning with regard to the Vietnam War and with his willingness to stand up for his convictions. I had the great honor to meet him at a book signing years ago and came away with the certainty that I have never met a holier man than this devout Muslim. Yeah. He certainly did. I'm just adding on to what you had to say, Melina. He certainly did state with clarity his position about invading another country and killing people for corporate America. Back to your phone calls. Alex is calling from Scottsdale, listening on 1190. Hey, Alex.
Hi, Jeff. Hey, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. I'm going to pull over here so you can hear me correctly.
Okay.
I was talking with a client the other day, and they were telling me about this client that was complaining about the situation it had.
Uh-huh.
And he brought, he goes, well, did you hear the new nickname of South Pound? And she goes, well, what's that? And he goes, Bible Spice.
What?
Bible Spice.
Bible Spice. Oh, yeah. I saw that in an email. Bible Spice.
Yeah. And he goes, you know, these guys have screwed it up so bad. And this guy was, and this was a client talking, and he was an attorney. He said, you're my attorney. I can confide in you.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, you know, I was raised by parents that were racist. And mm-hmm. he says, you know, I have been so dang darn blankety-blank screwed by these white guys that, you know, he goes, I just can't help to vote for the black guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he's had more than one client say that,
mm-hmm.
you know, because asking him because he's a progressive person and, you know, coming up with the, you know, Sarah Palin thing. You know, also with my background being in Alaska, knowing how much and the things she did wrong.
Right.
The thing about the boyfriend, I mean, the Red Guard News jumped on the Globe thing on Edwards, but they won't do it on Palin. You know, and the thing is that Hansen guy, the baby mm-hmm. with the Downs, did they ever do a DNA paternity test on that child to find out whether it was, the, you know, Super Dude or whatever his name is?
I don't know, and probably that story should be just kind of like left alone. Yeah, yeah. this woman is so bad. I mean the mere thought that the Republican Party would tolerate this sort of candidate to run for vice president is astonishing to me. It's just mind-boggling that would happen. Alex, thanks. I got to leave it there. Appreciate you checking in, pal. But let me just add something to what Alex said. I understand what he's saying about, you know, the white folks have screwed us over so many times. You know, why not vote for a black man? But that's a little dodgy, don't you think? I mean, that too is a form of racism. It really is. I know it's hard to see for a lot of us whites. It's hard to see that is a, you know, that's really kind of. How about voting for the best guy or woman, the best candidate? Let me non-genderize it. The best candidate happens to be that's running, that has a chance of winning is Barack Obama. I mean, really, truly, the best candidate who would get into the hands of Americans what we truly need would probably be Ralph Nader. But let's come back to the real world now, okay? The best candidate, based on his ideas and his youth and his ability to function as a chief executive officer of the United States, you know, this commander-in-chief crap. You know, the best way to handle being commander-in-chief, don't start any goddamn wars. Don't go any place and start bombing and invading. That's the best way to be commander-in-chief. Just say, okay, I'm going to leave that hat alone. Right now I'm going to focus on this country. And it just so happens, you know, Alex, that the best candidate happens to be a so-called African-American. I hate that term to begin with, but that's what I understand. You know, the last time I made some remark about African-American, what does that mean? I got a couple of emails from people who said they were of African descent and said, how dare you try to define us? That's how we're okay with that. Okay, that's cool. You know, I'm not going to get in the way of that bullet, you know. If you want to be African-American, be an African-American. You know, whatever you want to be is all right with me. But I don't think, let me rephrase it. I think we whites need to become a little bit more conscious of what we're saying when we make statements that we think are being very supportive of so-called people of color. Because so many times we don't realize it, but that statement itself, whatever that statement happens to be in a given moment, is really racist. And we don't see it because we've been the dominant thingy, you know, the dominant culture, dominant race, dominant, blah, dominant, blah, dominant. But, you know, that's changing. And I don't know. It's too late in the program to get into this. But I understand what you mean, Alex. I really do. I'm not trying to be, Mr. Schoolmarm here. I understand what you're saying, and you're right, pal. Thanks for checking in. We'll be back tomorrow night. Okay, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.